Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Buying or selling property is one of the biggest financial decisions most of us will ever make. But hidden amongst the pages of this offer to purchase are the legal clauses that can determine whether a sale goes ahead at all. One of the most important, and maybe even least understood, is the suspensive condition. So whether it's obtaining bond approval, selling an existing house, meeting another requirement, these conditions can mean the difference between successful transfer and the deal that falls apart. How do they work? What is a suspensive condition? And when do we know that it has been fulfilled? What happens if the deadline comes and goes? Joining us, of course, for a transfer talk is Taryn Harris. She's a partner, co-founder of Harris Marcus Mhlanga Attorneys. Taryn, a very good morning.
Morning.
Welcome. And I have to tell you, it's one of the slots I so look forward to, because I actually can't get over, because I've had the privilege of buying and selling a lot of properties, but I have these discussions and I learn a fortune. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So it's really amazing. Let's start with some of the basics. What exactly is a suspensive condition in an offer to purchase?
All right. So a suspensive condition means it's any condition that the parties choose to put in for one of their benefits or both their benefits that essentially suspends the agreement from coming into effect, with the exception of a few clauses in the agreement, okay, until that condition is fulfilled. So if the condition is not fulfilled timelessly and the agreement is not amended to give more time, then essentially the agreement doesn't come into force or effect. So any deposits that have been paid, anything that's happened subsequent to that, has to basically be refunded and put the parties back in the position they would have been in had the agreement not even been entered into. So that's right. The effect of a suspensive condition.
The contract is signed because you've signed that, but the contract of sale or purchase actually never goes into effect.
Correct. So a suspensive condition can be used in any type of agreement where basically it suspends the agreement from coming into effect
until
something has taken place or not taken place.
What are the most common suspensive conditions?
So there's generally two that are the most common, and then there's a third one that gets put in every now and again. So most people have to get bond finance. So obviously a condition to the sale would be that they get a loan from the bank and that a bond has been approved. And a certain amount of days is given to get that bond approval. Now, what happens if the bond approval isn't got in that time? Most agreements will have an automatic extension for 2 weeks or a further week. You have to check the agreement carefully, because not all agreements have the automatic extension.
Okay.
So if you're in the middle of in the process of getting your bond approval and it's the time is coming close that you're not going to meet the deadlines, then it's a very good idea for your conveyancer to draft an addendum to give you an extra week or 2 weeks or what you need, so that doesn't happen. So you don't, the agreement doesn't fall to pieces and end.
And with regard to a suspensive condition around a bond, could that be waived? In other words, so if I say it's on condition I'm going to get a bond, the deadline is 12 o'clock Monday, and I've spoken to my banker, it's all done, but I haven't got the official approval. Can I say, okay, I'm waiving that condition and it goes into effect?
Absolutely. So it'll say which party has to waive or meet the condition.
Right.
And then you could do it on that basis. What's important to note, Howard, with bond conditions is most people think a bond condition is fulfilled if they have pre-approval or if they get a loan in principle, and it's not.
Talk to us about that, because that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's very interesting if you've got a continued marketing clause and now the seller gets a further offer in, the buyer has a loan in principle, then can they accept the higher offer? Has the suspensive condition been met?
Okay.
So there are very practical reasons to know when the condition has been met. But essentially, because we have the National Credit Act, The banks are very slow and highly regulated as to what is deemed to be, when a condition is deemed to be met. So in terms of the National Credit Act, and I don't want to go into the specifics, but if anybody's very keen to look it up, it's Section 92. Essentially, the loan has to be accepted. Mm-hmm. The quote has to be accepted. Because if I'm a bank and I give you a quote, you don't know on what terms or what conditions that quote is going to have.
Of course.
You don't know the interest rate. You don't know what the terms
could be
of repayment.
In such a way.
Exactly. So just because you get a agreement in principle, a quote, doesn't mean that condition has been met.
That's interesting.
The buyer has to accept it. At the moment they accept the quote, that condition, then the condition's been fulfilled.
What is your experience at the moment? I know it goes through different stages where sometimes it's difficult to get a bond approval. Sometimes it's easier. What percentage people are getting? What are you seeing in your practice?
I'm seeing the banks giving a lot of finance at the moment.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even so much as up to 100% again, which I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, I'm so interested and surprised to hear that, because South African banks have been, and to their credit, actually, and that's why we weren't impacted in 2008 in the same way as other countries, but have been quite conservative in this.
Yeah, so look, it depends on the credit status.
I guess it doesn't mean they're not
status.
Being conservative. It just means that they are being, more helpful, assisting in this.
And less maybe risk averse. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it depends obviously on the credit rating of the applicant. It will depend on if they're a foreigner or not, because obviously if you're not a South African citizen, you're limited as to what you can actually get as finance. So what's important to note is if the agreement does lapse,
yes,
there is a way to restate it.
Right.
So you do a restatement and amendment agreement.
Right.
If you're going to amend the agreement, it must be done before the condition lapses.
Right.
So that's quite important to note. The second major type of suspensive condition is the sale of a property.
Right.
Most people already living in a property can't afford to own two properties at the same time. They don't qualify for a bond finance because they already have a loan that they're paying off with their existing property. So often the banks will say it's subject to the existing bond being canceled, which would mean they need to sell it.
Right.
So when you have the sale of an existing property, a lot of sellers obviously view this as not a strong offer. So suspensive conditions in general obviously are not as strong. I mean, it's actually better than having a cash deal. In South Africa, unless you really know where the cash is coming from and it's secure, and most people, even very wealthy people, do not buy with pure cash unless it's coming from the sale of a property.
Yes.
So you have to be very mindful of a sale of a property, because does it mean that soon as that property has been sold, or when that property becomes unsuspensive, that agreement becomes unsuspensive?
So you end up getting in a – it's almost like a domino effect here.
Correct. So what you want to say is when that property's been signed and all the conditions in that – agreement have been fulfilled. You don't want to be stuck where they're waiting for bond finance
exactly,
as well.
Exactly. So bond is the first most common, one of the most common. What you mentioned there were two plus a third.
So the third is the inspection report. So Howard, I've mentioned this to you off air that, people when they buy a car will go around and test drive four, five, six cars.
Yeah.
And then when they go to buy a property, they'll maybe walk through once or twice, maybe bring a family member, and that's it. And it's such a substantial amount of money and investment you're spending.
And you're locked in for a long time.
Not to do an inspection report. So yes, there is an initial outlay of money, but it's worth it in the end. However, with inspection reports, it's a slippery slope. So if you say that the agreement is subject to, the positive outcome of an inspection report, what does that mean? Homes are living and breathing things. You've owned homes. There's always maintenance. There's always things that need to be done. So at what stage do you say that you've met that condition? So my suggestion would be that it would be structural damage, and up to a certain amount. So you would say whatever, obviously depending on the value of the property, 100,000, 300,000, anything above that, the buyer would be able to get out. Anything below that, they wouldn't. So I think it's very important to limit what the inspection report is there for. Is it there to see damp? Is it there to see structural?
Yeah, because otherwise it's just an open-ended. It's really just open-ended.
100%. Mm. So, you know, not everyone would agree that's listening that they should go out and do inspection reports, but it saves a lot of hassle after the fact.
What type of, who does one go to for an inspection report?
So there's various companies out there that you can Google. I don't want to promote different companies on air, but there are companies out there, and depending on what you're asking them to do, it can be anywhere from 10 to 20,000, which again, is quite a bit of money, but it's an investment. And if you're really serious about taking that step and buying a property, you want to know what is in this property. What is the roof like? What is there damp? Has it been built correctly? All of these sorts of things are important if you're taking on this property. But then again, you know, it's up to the buyer. They can walk through a property and it seems like it's fine.
Do these suspensive conditions often impact the price? You mentioned sort of a cash offer earlier. Do people take, in your experience, do they take less for a property for certain in order to pay for certainty?
So it's funny you say that. Previously, in many years gone by, probably before my time transferring property in this country, cash was king.
Yes.
Everybody
yes.
loved a cash
That's
offer.
That's what I would have assumed.
But now, not so much, because when you need bond finance, it means the bank does scrutiny of your buyers.
Ah.
So it you know, they check it out substantially, who these people are, to make sure that they're locked in. So if you know that a buyer has got bank finance, they've been approved by the bank.
A lot about,
it means they've gone through the FICA, the credit check, everything of a bank. So it could mean your property is actually more secure if it meets what the bank's requirements. Having said that, it's important to note that a bank is entitled to pull their funding at any time before registration.
Ah.
So I've had that before where we had a suspensive condition. I had a lady actually call me. It wasn't even my transfer. She was in a state. And there was some financial change in her life, and she could no longer afford the property. The bank picked this up without her showing it, and they pulled the funding before registration. Now her condition was deemed to be fulfilled according to the seller and the agent. Now what? But at the end of the day, if you can't afford a property, Howard, you can't really force someone to buy it if they don't have the finances to buy it. So
Absolutely.
Then is she in breach?
And do you really want to walk that road? A very interesting one. Unfortunately, we are out of time. What haven't we covered with suspensive conditions that people need to know, besides that if they have questions, they must get hold of you?
So I think with suspensive conditions, it shouldn't be seen as a hurdle.
Mm.
It shouldn't be seen as not a strong offer. It's important to really monitor the timing of the suspensive condition, that the offer doesn't lapse, and then you give a buyer or a seller an opportunity to get out of the contract. And I think just make sure you've got the right people in your corner monitoring what needs to be done.
Absolutely right. And that's why I keep going back to this notion that it's so important to have somebody on your side. Just a quick question. Marcel says, if you pay your bond repayments the 14th and the 29th of the month, do you reduce your bond payment quicker? I don't know if that's more of a question for you or for an accountant.
So the way you reduce your bond payment faster is don't pay the minimum payment. So you've got to pay more than the minimum payment. When you pay your bond doesn't really matter in the month, but it's about paying more than the principal amount, because then your interest is not capitalized and you're bringing down that compounded interest.
So that, Marcel, that is the answer. I hope that it helps you. Taryn Harris, thank you as always.
Thanks,
I look
Howard.
Forward to chatting to you next week.